All right. What up, what up? It is Tuesday, 5 p.m. We're back with an all-new edition of What Are Your Thoughts? We have a jam-packed show. A lot to say, not a lot of time to say it in. I do want to give a couple of quick shout-outs in the chat, mostly because people are saying nice things about my hair. First, the nice thing about Michael, Leave the Gene Pool said, Batnick predicted that this broadening out would create a weird environment months ago. It's a great call by Michael. I agree. See Paul Breezy, JB got that John Gruden Hair School for Men look working. I guess. Josh looks like a...
You could use a visor.
Yeah.
It's visor season.
Josh looked like a golden rooster on CNBC today. You're damn right I did. All right. Who else is here? Sam F. is in the house. Cliff Peebles is back. Noah Turner says, what up? Magnus is here. Jacobs 2001. Bloom Energy. Blooming after hours like Josh's hair. All right. It's enough of that. Who's the sponsor tonight, Michael?
It is DBMF. This podcast is brought to you by them, the world's largest managed futures ETF. Alternatives should do two things: be uncorrelated to traditional asset classes and deliver strong performance. But many alternatives don't do those things very well. That's where DBMF comes in. With its revolutionary low-cost approach, DBMF has quickly become the world's largest managed futures ETF, delivering both alpha-generating returns and genuine diversification to portfolios. Find out why managed futures should be a foundational part of any alternatives allocation at www.dbmf.com/WAYT. The fund's investment objectives, risks, charges, and expenses must be considered carefully before investing. The statutory and summary prospectuses contain this and other important information about the investment company. It may be obtained by visiting www.imgp.com. The IMGP DBI Managed Futures Strategy ETF is distributed by Alps Distributors, Inc.
All right, gangsters, this is, we say this every quarter, and every time we say it, it's always true. We are in the most important week, statistically, and perhaps emotionally, for earnings season. We are going to hear in the next two nights from four of the biggest companies in the world, and arguably the comments, not just the numbers from those companies, matter just as much for the rest of the overall market. Or do they? Microsoft and Meta are tomorrow after the close. And the following night on Thursday, we're going to get Apple and Amazon. Quick programming note, I want to let you guys know, we're going to finish out the week with the Compound and Friends, and we're bringing our friend and perhaps the world's foremost authority on big tech, Alex Kantrowitz, back on the show. So tonight, we're going to do a preview of the big storylines going into these reports. And then on Friday, we're going to give you like the postmortem. Here's what happens.
The reveal,
and here's what you actually need to take away. So we have you covered front and back. Let's start with Microsoft. Michael, you said before, this is the one that you pay the most attention to or you look forward to the most. Is that still true?
Did I say that?
Yeah.
I take it back. I don't remember thinking that. But okay. Go on. What did I say? I say a lot of things.
I don't know specifically, but I think you were just talking about it in terms of its importance to the ecosystem and maybe because it's in the biggest drawdown of the whole group and all that OpenAI exposure. And I think you said last time they reported, like, this is the one that you're looking most forward to. I don't know. I guess it's not still the case now.
I feel like you might be misquoting me. I don't know.
Well, that definitely.
Well, listen, Microsoft is the biggest software stock in the world. And yes. So, yeah, you're damn right. I'm interested to hear what they have to say. Absolutely.
All right. We'll roll the tape back. We'll see if you ever said that or if my own internal AI hallucinated it. I'm going to give you the expectations and then, Michael, you can react to it. $4.24 on earnings, revenue of $87.7 billion. The entire conversation around Microsoft is not about the software business these days. It's about Azure. Azure grew 40% last quarter. Investors want to hear 39 to 40% this quarter. The other big number, the CapEx number, $190 billion is what the company said they're on pace to spend for calendar 2026, which is an insane number. So we're going to watch for that growth rate. CapEx versus free cash flow is really the big part of the story. We know that the hyperscalers with cloud data businesses are very happy to see that free cash flow squashed to zero and continue to spend. I do think Copilot monetization is going to matter here. So I guess that's sort of their software business. Paid Copilot seats broke 20 million last quarter. That was over 250% over the prior year. So any update on seat growth could be taken positively. The other thing that's happened is that Microsoft recently gave up Azure's exclusivity serving OpenAI models. And so now that exclusivity is gone. And I think people are going to want some clarity. Well, what is going to be the AI strategy on the software side? The last thing here, we talked about this earlier, Michael, the commercial backlog. The number right now is $627 billion, which is so big, so unbelievably gigantic. I think it partially explains the patience that investors have with all this CapEx spending. Think about how big that number is. I wasn't sure exactly what gets considered commercial backlog. And Michael, I think you and I didn't know the answer, like what really goes in there. So I thought I'd share what it's actually made up of. It's multi-year Azure consumption commitments. So these are enterprises that have signed deals to spend a certain amount over the coming years, but it's backlog until they actually book it. It's Office 365 and Microsoft 365 subscription contracts. Again, these are multi-year. It's server and cloud enterprise agreements. And it's large AI infrastructure commitments, including the OpenAI deal. So it's almost like at whatever revenue they're not booking immediately just gets added onto that pile. And so the quarterly revenue only reflects what's actually been delivered and recognized. We want to see, I think if we're long, we want to see upside to that $627 billion because it's evidence that the return for all this CapEx is actually on its way in the form of signed commitments from enterprise customers. Did I explain that well?
You did. It's funny, Josh. You and I think alike. After the show last week, I did the exact same thing. Made sure I was educated on what the backlog is, and it's exactly what you think it is. It's exactly how you described it.
Okay. Anything else on Microsoft here? Do you think it's going to be eventful?
So I actually took a shot in the stock a couple of weeks ago. I bought some software names. I bought Microsoft, Workday, and ServiceNow 3 weeks ago or so. Okay. And I think I'm probably going to... What's that?
You still long?
Yeah, modest positions. I burned my hand a couple of times on those stoves. I'm probably going to whack it off at the open, and that's a teaser for later in the show. I don't love the setup going into the call. And
It's limping into the report.
Yes, it's uninspiring.
Okay, Meta. So I thought we would steal some commentary from Mark Mahaney for this one. We're borrowing it. We're not stealing it. Consensus $7.23 on $60 billion in revenue. Almost the entirety of that is advertising. It's almost the whole business. The big question here is, if AI-driven ad targeting is still moving the needle enough to justify the massive CapEx, and how do margins look? The growth will be there. This is like, of all the problems Meta has, growth is not one of them. So this is, Mark Mahaney points to five specific things to watch out for, and I'll just list them and I'll get your reaction. One, Meta should be able to print revenue near the top end of its guidance range, $61 billion. That would be a 28% year-over-year revenue growth number, which is fantastic.
Nuts.
Yeah. And he's saying that given the perceived strength in the ad market, and they've done all these checks, and I won't bore you with it, but it doesn't look like there's any sort of pullback in ad spending generally. And of course, Meta is one of the biggest platforms in the world for advertising. So the environment is good. Operating margins will be down materially, but will be in a robust mid-30 percentage range given the inherent leverage on the Meta model. Three, updated commentary on 26 CapEx and OpEx, early reads into 27. He points out, in the wake of Google, the market will be expecting Meta to raise its 26 CapEx outlook as well from the current $125 billion to $145 billion guidance. So do they go to 150, in other words? Do they go much higher? 4, any indications of new capital allocation plans. And then 5, any management plans to sell excess compute capacity. And he thinks, this is Mark Mahaney at Evercore ISI, confirmation of this would likely be perceived positively by the market. The market likes that story of them taking some of the capacity they've built and monetizing it right now. So that's the read from Mahaney. What do you think about Meta going into the print?
At the risk of getting too cute, I think you could do something very similar to Google. Google fell 6% after its earnings, and you and I spoke briefly. I said, this was a really good quarter.
Yeah.
Like, if you were just looking at the fundamentals, it was really good, and the street hated it, and it gapped down 6%. It has been up in the next 3 trading sessions. I think you're going to see something similar out of Meta. I think the Reels monetization is going to be insane, up 30% year over year. I think it's going to be a monster number, but I don't think it's going to matter right now, because the only thing that investors seem to be focused on right now is CapEx and free cash flow. And one's going higher, the other's going lower. So I think they're going to punish a stock at the open.
What do you... So I know this is like a counterfactual that's not really possible because it's too late. They're already in the spending mode. And once you've spent some, you have to spend the rest. Otherwise, all that investment you've already made is worthless. So they're not going to pull back on spending until and unless they literally have to, which I don't see coming. But I wonder, what do you think the stock price reaction would be if they kept CapEx spend exactly where it is and said, we're very comfortable with the rate? Does the stock add 10% the wake of that news? Get nervous and say, whoa, 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 whoa. Wait, they're like pulling back?
I suppose you could have it both ways where they hate it either way. But I think if they said they're just maintaining, I think the stock goes up 10%, maybe more.
Yeah, I wouldn't be shocked.
Business is on fire and it's trading at 16 times forward earnings. I don't think it would take a lot to get investors very excited.
I would buy on that news if I didn't miss the 10% gap. That it's like, nope, we're very comfortable with our CapEx for the year. No change to guidance. We're sticking to our plan.
Listen,
wants that.
Nobody is saying that. I suppose somebody would have to be the first by definition. I don't see that happening.
Okay. All right. So that's tomorrow. Let's do Amazon and Apple, which report the following night. I'm more excited for these two than I am for the other two. I own both, so it makes sense that I'm more excited. But I also think that, well, maybe Amazon's not going to be that interesting. All right. $1.82 in earnings, $196 to $197 billion in revenue. That would be 17% growth over the prior year on the top line. Again, similar to Microsoft, the most important thing is AWS, which is their cloud business. And analysts are actually expecting acceleration. They think they're going to see 32 to 33% cloud growth driven by surging AI workload demand.
Google did 82%. I know it's a smaller base, but 82%.
Yeah. Right. Google's number 3 behind Amazon and Azure. But what else? CapEx guidance is the swing factor. Amazon is already currently guiding to $200 billion for full year 2026. That's versus $125 billion that they spent in 2025. These are almost adding up to real numbers. So Alphabet went from 180 to 195 to 205. So the street thinks Amazon's going to do something similar. If they hold the line at $200 billion, again, it could be read as a relief. If they meaningfully hike above that, like they go to 220, I feel like that's a negative for the stock. Even if it's the right thing for the business, I think the investors just want like a status quo announcement. I just don't think people want to wrap their head around more. But they're not going to worry about what the street thinks this week. It's just not the culture at Amazon. There's some weird shit with Prime Day, but I almost think it doesn't matter. The retail business is very steady. It's not a big needle mover. You can kind of set your watch by it. I don't think it's a swing factor for the stock. There's a distortion where Prime Day fell in Q2 this year versus Q3, which pulled sales forward. No one gives a shit. I don't think there's anything left really to say on Amazon. The one thing on a stock basis that I would say, getting away from the company itself, this has really been running in place for a long time.
It doesn't, a very long time.
As bad as the pullbacks in Tesla, Microsoft, and Meta, but like it also is literally going nowhere. And I don't know what, I really don't know what actually changes that dynamic, but that's the read on Amazon going in. Apple. When we did a show 2 weeks ago, why Apple's going to 400. Everything that I've read and thought about since, I'm absolutely convinced this is still going to be the one to own for the second half of the year. The stock went out at an all-time record high today. It is literally pennies from closing above a $5 trillion market cap.
I think it did.
It might have gotten there, but I don't know if it closed there. Whatever. It's right there. Tim Cook's last earnings call as CEO. This is his final earnings print before the transition. So there'll be a lot of questions about the transition itself. And we're going to start hearing from new CEO John Ternus on the next earnings call. We'll hear from him before that because, remember, there's a big September 1st event coming up.
Tim Cook has never said anything interesting on the earnings calls. I don't know about never. Yeah. I haven't listened to all of them, but he's pretty boring.
He's very buttoned up. They did get a major – we talked about this already, so we won't say a lot, but they did have a major major victory during the course of the quarter with their China business. They got approval from Beijing to include AI, obviously homegrown AI models, on Apple phones in China. It's a big deal. It's their second biggest market. It was a big question mark hanging over the stock. The capital light AI narrative is gaining traction. So it's here's the phrase to watch for. They're calling it AI on device, as opposed to AI that's being carried out at the data center. So Apple Silicon is enabling these next generation of phones to do more on device. And then thinking about the frontier models almost as like feeders into the iOS services ecosystem. And the market, like, I mean, I've been pounding the table on that thesis. The market has really come around, and I think they like it a lot. So this is almost the biggest company in the world, very close to NVIDIA. iPhone stuff, is it normalizing or is it slowing? So they got a big burst of enthusiasm when they launched the iPhone 17. Is their follow-through in the quarter? Very important. Tariff and component costs. Apple very famously came out and said they were going to be raising prices across a lot of their most popular devices because of the price of memory chips, among other components that go into the products. So they've got those price hikes in the market now, and we'll see if that is offsetting demand.
No, it's interesting how it's the narratives on these stocks is changing so fast. It was Thursday, June 25th. I forget who we were on the air with, but they were raising prices as a result of memory costs, and of course it was going to come to margin, and they whacked the stock. It was down 6% on the day.
Yeah.
And I think we were like, that doesn't really make sense to me. Like, demand is not going to change. The stock
We're going to find out, right? Like, this is the quarter where they're going to have to answer for what happened to demand in the wake of price hikes.
So I don't know if there's enough time because that was only a month ago. But on that day, the stock closed at 270, and that was the low. And in the blink of an eye, it ran up to 340. So even on the biggest stock in the world, people are so wrong, us included, all of the time. Yeah. And the narratives follow the price, obviously, always.
Yeah. So the narrative now is if you want to own large cap tech and you want to invest in AI, Apple is the company that is not spending $1 trillion over the next 5 years in CapEx, but is poised to become a toll booth for consumer AI use on device. People really have come around to that story. That was not the story with the stock 6 months ago, to your point. The story was Apple is literally nowhere in AI. All of their best AI scientists are running off to join the circus. They lost 400 employees to OpenAI. They lost Johnny Ive to his own design studio. And it was like, well, what are we doing about AI? Why aren't we building data centers and blah, blah, blah? And why doesn't Apple have its own LLM? Why doesn't Siri work? Nobody's speaking that way anymore. People are now speaking about this being sort of a covert way to see earnings come in from AI without Apple having had to make these types of investments that are making people nervous.
Yeah.
Quite like at Oracle, they cut the stock to one notch above junk. People clearly like the capital light version of benefiting from AI versus that. So
Oracle down 70%.
Dude, it looks like a company.
Matter of fact, it's down. We have it right here. All right. Why is this chart here? It seems sort of out of order, but whatever. Josh, you asked for this. Some stocks that are getting whacked.
Oh, in the Teflon market. I don't need it right up top. Why don't you take over?
All right. So this is a natural segue to what's happening with earnings season. I thought this was really interesting. There is this notion that some investors have, at least I did, and I think others share the same thing, that if a stock is performing really well going into earnings, you might say, or somebody might go on TV and say it's priced for perfection, right? And that makes sense.
Like, I don't use that term.
Buy the rumor, sell the news type of thing. Like, that all checks out. Yeah. But actually, there is a lot of wisdom in stock prices. So Adam Parker said, you better not miss earnings. He said, quote, cheap stocks with bad momentum are not de-risked into the print. They are anticipating the miss correctly. And the miss is a confirmation of the price action. Stocks with bad momentum that are cheap have never been punished more for missing. Let me read that one more time. Stocks with bad momentum that are cheap have never been punished more for missing. So that's what gives me pause about Microsoft. That's what gives me pause about Meta going to the print and whatever. I don't know if I'd be wrong, but
that makes me nervous. That makes me nervous on Uber, which is going to report on August 5th. It's a dirt cheap stock with horrendous momentum.
You should.
That is like exactly what he's talking about.
So obviously, listen, I'd love for Meta and Microsoft to gap up. Who wouldn't like to see that? But Adam has run the data, and he has this kick-ass chart that shows the mean industry relative return for missing EPS over time, and he's breaking it down by price to forward earnings quintile. So he's showing that stocks in the bottom quintile of 12-month momentum through the end of June 2026, and what you're seeing is the cheap stocks, when they miss, holy shit, they get killed.
Killed. Cheap is not going to save you in this market.
Killed. So yeah. The market is anticipating. These stocks are cheap for a reason. Now, there was an important caveat. Chart off, please, Daniel. Is that, listen, most stocks don't miss earnings, right? Like, there is a high beat rate. Matter of fact, you have 100%.
The guidance comes from the company.
Right. So they tell you.
It would be crazy if most stocks missed earnings.
So 100% of financials, industrials, communications, and staples have beat through July 23rd. 100%. Yeah. So the only place that you're getting any sort of misses is in discretionary, 13%. 11% materials, 4% information tech, 8% healthcare, 20% real estate, 40% energy. So most companies don't miss, but the ones that do and the cheap ones, they get slaughtered. All right, so that's what gives me pause about Microsoft and Meta. All right, let's talk about the market. Because Josh, I am...
Well, wait, we can't... Before we move off this subject, I did want to show you this list of stocks. Give me the 52-week drawdown chart. There's a couple of points I want to make here, Michael, that are germane to what you just said. We're within a couple of percent of an all-time record high in the S&P 500. And look at the stocks in more than a 20% drawdown. And I'll just, for the people listening, Oracle, -65%. That's the worst. Coinbase, -59%. SanDisk, -50%. Surprise! Nike's in a 46% drawdown. ServiceNow, 45%. Western Digital, 43%. Netflix down 42%. Palantir down 40, and it gets less bad, but still pretty bad. Tesla, Salesforce, Adobe, Uber,
Josh, there's
Microsoft, Chipotle. These are cornerstones of corporate America, and they're down by a third or worse. Every sector, it's unbelievable that the market is holding up as well as it is, given the names that are absent from the 52-week high list and just getting absolutely demolished. What do you think about that?
I'll bet a one, do you? throw that chart back up. Out of all of these stocks, and there's maybe 20 on this list that are getting smoked, there's really only three that are expensive. I would say 2.5 because Tesla is its own animal. It doesn't trade on
right.
anything. It's Palantir and Robinhood. Everything else here is a market multiple or below stock. These are not. So when you think of, like, I think people have this tendency to think expensive stocks get smoked. And yes, sometimes.
No.
But it's the opposite. It's the cheap stocks that are getting smoked. So yeah, Adam's right. All right. So I want to talk about the stock market. Throw this chart up today, Daniel. This is what happened today. A lot of green and a lot of bright red. And the bright red was in the AI trade. It continues to unwind. And at the risk of sounding like an idiot in front of a Fed meeting and some big earnings reports where the market could change in a second and make this take age terribly, chart off. This market is Teflon. The Mag 7.
How is it Teflon, though?
The Mag.
No,
the
it is, but how?
The Mag 7, dead. Throw up this chart, Daniel. So year to date, there's one stock in the Mag 7 that's beating the index. Apple. Mm. That's it. Mm. The market lost the Mag 7.
All of it.
All of it. Every one of them except for Apple are underperforming. Chart off. So we lost the Mag 7 and the market marched higher. So that was the leadership group. And then we lost the AI trade. Semiconductors blown into the Stone Age. The equal weight index was up over 1% today. The S&P 500 was green today. We lost the Mag 7 and we lost the semiconductors. What is it going to take for this market to give the bears what they want?
We're getting by with this bizarre combination of healthcare, financials, small caps, and Apple and NVIDIA holding up, or Apple pushing to new highs.
NVIDIA's not holding up.
It is. It's like it's hovering around 200. It's a little bit above, a little bit below. It's holding up. Dude, believe me, relative to the Microns of the world, it's doing just fine.
It's not helping the market.
It's stabilizing the market. That's all I'm saying. I'm not saying it's contributing. The stock's doing nothing this year, but it's also not in a 40% drawdown. I just showed you AMD down 22%. SanDisk down 54%. It's not doing that. So I think that helps, but it's really the financials, the healthcare names. Obviously, energy is leading the market year to date, although most of those gains happen in Q1, not Q2, but they're sort of hung in there. Like Exxon is hanging in there closer to highs than lows. So you have this really bizarre. Oh, the industrials. Last Bank of America, I don't have a chart, but Bank of America said last week was an all-time record for single stock buying by clients in industrial stocks. Like, that's what's holding this market up.
Next the Halo, chart.
The Halo trades are holding the market up for sure. The Halo ETF is outperforming the S&P since inception. LOHA, full disclosure, I'm involved in that. It's up, I think, 5.5%, close to 6% since inception. The S&P is down 1% since it launched. Like, I know it's not that much time, but it's just indicative. What's in that ETF? Airlines, JB Hunt. It's companies nobody's ever heard of, like TFI. I couldn't even tell you. But these are the stocks that people are moving toward. They love the industrials.
So Ryan Dietrich tweeted, most stocks in the S&P 500 above the 50-day moving average since February, 70% above the 200-day moving average. So the leadership names, the biggest names are falling apart, and the market is still, at least the equal weight, ripping to new all-time highs. I want to give a rest in peace to the AI will kill everything trade, and I would present to you as Exhibit A, Expedia and Charles Schwab.
Yeah, eat me.
Remember the... Okay, so Expedia, why would you need this website when you have AI? Okay, new all-time high. Remember when Hazel was going to kill Schwab? And, you know, we love Hazel, we use Hazel, we love Altruist, we use Altruist, but I think we all joked at the time.
You know what this is, Michael? This is just people drawing, like connecting the dots. But
made no sense at the time. So yeah. That trade is now over, and we had a monster two-day change in software outperforming semiconductors. And this is only IGV. And IGV includes Palantir, and it includes Oracle and Microsoft. If you were to just isolate like the horizontal software names that were supposedly dead, like Salesforce and Workday and ServiceNow, again, two names that I own. They were like, if you were to just look at this, the 2-day change looks even more extreme.
Yeah, you know what? Having a moment, Berkshire Hathaway.
Berkshire Hathaway.
So I've been pounding the table on the insurance stocks on TV and here, like we've been talking about Travelers and Allstate, and these stocks are all making record highs. Berkshire is too. Berkshire owns a huge slug of Coca-Cola, which today gapped higher to an all-time record. So Berkshire's a big holder there. They obviously have all the utility exposure. They obviously have transportation exposure via the railroad. All of these things are firing on all cylinders. And Berkshire, of course, primarily an insurance company. So between the Coca-Cola position, the American Express position, catering to the top of the K, transports, industrials, utilities, it has like everything investors want right now, almost as if like it was premeditated for this moment. I know it's of course not, but I thought that was interesting.
One thing that I was thought was worth pointing out, if you would like to be cautious on the market, is Staples ripping is not like awesome. You don't love to see that. Well, guess what? Staples gapped higher by, I don't know, 3 or 4% and closed on the dead lows of the day. So the resilience of the market, it's just, I am beyond impressed. All right, let's continue the semi-crash conversation. So there has been a monster unwind, just a disgusting unwind in SanDisk and our Sweet Western Digi and Micron and about all these things that we've been talking about that we own. So this was a necessary unwind. It's not fun for anybody involved, but look at this chart. $46 billion of inflows into semiconductor ETFs this year alone.
Bananas.
Just obviously unsustainable. And again, it feels shitty, but this I'm sorry, I don't know what to tell you. This puke was necessary. So obviously the story in the journal yesterday or 2 days ago about NVIDIA being in talks with OpenAI to guarantee $250 billion in financing for data center did not help the matter. I think investors are sort of done with the circular stuff. And I want to read you something. Josh, you got to get a load of this. So Lutnick and the Trump administration also have a lot riding on the Ohio project. As part of its commitment to invest in the U.S. in return for lower tariffs, Japan agreed to invest $33 billion in a natural gas power project on federal land in Ohio that would be operated by SB Energy, which is effectively controlled by Masayoshi Son. SoftBank is involved in this, of course. So SB Energy has received an investment from OpenAI and SoftBank. SB Energy has received an investment from OpenAI, and SoftBank itself is one of the largest investors in OpenAI. Right. In March, of course, Lutnick, Son, and Energy Secretary Chris Wright broke ground on the data center complex. There's so much circular activity and in dealing happening that investors are sick of it.
Well, NVIDIA, so the journal article that you're referencing, which we're not going to do a deep dive into, it's just more of the same, but on a larger scale. NVIDIA is in talks to provide a $250 billion backstop for OpenAI as part of a massive data center project. So basically OpenAI is going to foot the bill for this, and NVIDIA is basically going to be one of the biggest tech vendors to the project. So they're almost like saying, you don't have to worry about money.
Yeah, we'll give you money to pay us.
We'll give you money to give it back to us. People do not, I understand the purpose of that guarantee to make sure the project actually goes forward. And they're doing this out in the open. It's not like a lie or a hidden thing, but people do not like it.
The stock fell 5%.
Yeah. To your point, they also don't like the mixture of politics and business. I mean, look, I think we all know that OpenAI is going to grant 5% of itself to the federal government before it goes public. They've floated that as a trial balloon. I think they're going to do it. I think it's strategically smart. I don't think it costs them anything. The next time we have a financial crisis, the government will sell it for cash on the open market. A new administration, they'll say, we don't want to be in the OpenAI business. We'll get rid of that stake. But what that buys them is unlimited political cover. And we've seen this work we've seen this work with the gambling companies, Kalshi and Polymarket. Donald Trump Jr. owns a stake in both. No one's f***ing with these companies. That's it. That's checkmate. So the Trump administration being able to do a Rose Garden ceremony with Sam Altman and accept on behalf of the American people a 5% stake in OpenAI, that buys him almost unlimited political cover for the next couple of years. And I think they're going to do it. I don't think people love it. But if you were Sam Altman, it's like, yeah, why wouldn't we do that? Think about all the aggravation that saves us to have at least half the country's political people on our side rather than both parties hating us.
It's not just aggravation. It's financing costs. Yeah. If NVIDIA has your back, all right, you're not SOFR plus 15%. I mean, I'm exaggerating, but like the rates are a lot better with NVIDIA at your back. All right, let's get back to some of the sell-off. Tech, hardware, and equipment stock drawdowns. The average is down 27% from its 52-week high. Sandisk is down 54. Corning is down 55. By the way, that Corning, actually, we'll get to that in a second. We have a chart on that later. Let's move to the semi-stocks. The average is in a 30% drawdown. Marvell, which Jensen Huang said about a month or two ago was going to be the next trillion-dollar stock. Whoops, just got cut in half.
Yeah. Well, George Jinx in the chat. MF or I bought the top again. Listen,
you're not the only one.
Tops are created by an excess of buying. So a lot of people contributed to the creation of that, at least short-term top. I think this is on balance very healthy for the market because people aren't throwing in the towel on the rest of their stocks. This is sort of like it's a three-ring circus. This is one of the rings. In the other ring, you have people making money hand over fist in bank stocks and the investment banks. In another ring, you have people buying up industrials, and this isn't really shaking them out. So I think like you had an excess. The semis felt like a one-way trade.
It was. Dude, SanDisk got cut in half. I don't know how many stocks you could say this about in the history of the market. SanDisk, a company, like a legitimate company of the size, the stock has been cut in half in 30 days.
And it's still up like 200%.
It's still up 100% year over year. And okay. if you zoom out a little bit, it still looks like it's in an uptrend. I know this isn't, you know, it doesn't give you a lot of confidence, but this had to happen. So Corning
We'll spend 2 seconds on Corning. The reason this matters is because Corning is in this small group of stocks that has become synonymous with the AI CapEx trade that are not in the tech index. Or not really thought of as like the way we think of semiconductor stocks. And they've become sort of a signal of sort about risk appetite around the AI CapEx build out. So those stocks include Comfort Systems, which is FIX, Corning, Caterpillar, believe it or not, Vertiv. There's this whole group of names. They actually beat earnings. Revenue grew 17%. They hit $4.74 billion. Adjusted earnings were up 30%, which beat consensus. Operating margins expanded as well. It's not a bad quarter. The guidance didn't hit the whisper number. We're back to that bullshit. So Q3 revenue guidance came in at 4.9 to 5 billion. And the whisper was they're going to do 5 for guidance. And that's it. This is the point. The stock was up 30% year to date going into this. And had tripled off its lows. And all of a sudden, what ends up happening is the same thing that happened to the memory stocks. It's no longer about the fundamentals being solid. Everybody agrees they're solid. Yeah, yeah. It's mentality. It's like, well, I wanted more. The expectations catch up with the fundamentals and then outpace them and become unrealistic. And then there's nothing you could do that's good enough. And the whole optical sector, because what Corning is doing in the data centers is fiber optics and glass for chips and all kinds of shit. But Coherent, Lumentum, Marvell, Ciena, AXT, this whole cohort of like the optical stocks that are involved in data center. They crushed all of them and they've all been going down. So the company actually, give me the Corning stock price one more time. Dude, 255 to 126 in less than 8 weeks.
No. In July.
Oh, was that?
In July.
Yeah.
It was at 255 at the end of last month.
Yeah, dude.
Of this decline is in July. So I know this doesn't feel great, and hear me say this is healthy sucks, but this was necessary. The decks have been cleared. Expectations have reset. And this happened. This, you know?
Chart Kid tells us this is the 23rd worst day for Corning since 1980. This is not a rock and roll stock. You can see it was some really tough days in the 2000 to 2002 dot-com bubble burst because Corning was a player back then as well. Since then, this company for 20 years has been minding its own business, doing very boring industrial things with the exception of like supplying glass to Apple for iPhones. And now it's like right back into here, third worst month for Corning ever. Put this up. Third worst month ever, negative 50.7% this month. Sick. Forward earnings per share.
All right, so here we go. The question is, what's going to happen with the earnings? And is the forward PE too cheap? So the forward 12 months earnings per share up and to the right. I mean, unbelievable. There's a reason why these stocks went up 500%. And now you have Micron trading at 5x forward 12 month earnings. SanDisk, same. Corning, I don't know what it's at, but way lower. And chart off, the market's not dumb. Yeah. The market is not dumb. It doesn't give away free money. Micron at 6x earnings, the market is telling you something very clear, very obviously. It doesn't believe it. Not that the next 12-month earnings, because it might be trading at 6x 2027 earnings, but what if it's trading at 30x 2028 earnings? And that's what Bernstein is predicting. Next chart. Check this out. So Sean Emery tweeted, Bernstein has earnings in memory graphic and memory going parabolic.
Look at this chart.
And then collapsing. So this is the first time I've seen something like this. We're looking at Samsung, SK Hynix, and Micron. And this is what the market believes to be happening because there's no other way a company that's tripling its revenue year over year would be trading at 5x forward earnings. It doesn't make sense until you look at this. It doesn't make sense.
So if you want to make the case that what's going on this year is not a valuation bubble, but an earnings bubble, that's a great chart for you because that explains number one, it explains why today's quote unquote cheap multiples are not that cheap. And number two, you just think about what that's going to feel like for the longs who ride that over the cliff. And they're still in this stock 2 years from now. And they're like, I don't understand. The company's going 30%. How come the stock is still going down? Because eventually, these companies revert back to what they are, which is commodity producers of a product. And the users become more efficient at using it. New lanes of supply open up. It's some combination of those things all conspiring together to make it so something that looked like it was a new secular growth story. Oh, wait, turns out it's cyclical.
Well, Patrick asked Sam Altman, what could change the shortage of memory? And one of the things that Sam said was maybe the models just get more efficient and just figure out how to use it better.
That's what I've been saying. If that is so much of a pain point that it's forcing Apple to raise prices on all its laptops and phones, you better believe the buyers of these raw materials and commodity memory chips, this is what they're focused on. More efficiency for the dollars that we have to spend. There's a company in China, CMXT, which went public, I think with an $85 billion initial valuation and went up 460%. Not a typo that I'm speaking. Went up almost 500% on its IPO day. One day. Became the largest public company in mainland China. A memory chip company that nobody has ever heard of until 10 minutes ago. So this is sign of the time stuff, the Korean retail traders and what they're doing with leverage, on and on and on and on. There's so much going on there. Maybe easier to step aside. Let's skip the Sam Altman stuff because we're going to do this with Alex, okay?
Good call.
All right. We're going to do the Fed really quickly. Do people honestly expect, put this Citadel Securities thing up. This spooked the market. Citadel came out and said they think there could be a surprise rate hike. I don't know what the probability is in the futures market. I think I saw 40% now. The market initially sold off on this and then came all the way back. Is that what happened?
I don't know if that's what moved the market. I'm not sure. When was this? This was yesterday?
I don't know. It all blends together, yesterday and today.
Yeah.
I mean, people were mad that Citadel did this. I think it spooked the market and got people to sell some stuff.
I don't know. Maybe it did.
And then the market ripped right in everyone's face.
I was very sick yesterday. Neil Dutta also thinks that the market is going, that the Fed is going to go. So,
okay. I don't. So I'm on the other side of that. And I would assume Citadel and Neil are better informed than I do, than I am. But I just don't picture Trump's appointee sitting down in the seat for 3 weeks and the first thing he does is a rate hike.
So, all right. So in conclusion, we lost the Mag 7. We lost semiconductors. The Fed may hike. Rates are as high as they've been in a long time. Inflation is sticky. Maybe tariffs, more war, and the market is at an all-time high. What else are you going to throw at it?
Listen, man, if this S&P can weather this semiconductor crash and not have six of seven Mag 7 names, even within 5% of a high, it's very hard to be bearish. And I know people say, you guys will be bearish either way. You guys will be bullish no matter what happens. You guys are always finding a reason to be bullish. Dude, look at the tape.
I'm bearish when stocks start to go down. I listen to the market.
Michael gets bearish one red day.
Yeah, if the market's down today, I'll turn bearish. I don't care.
This is one of those times where the tape is not speaking. It's whispering, specifically to me. You know, it really is. I feel like I have a really good handle on the tape right now.
I'm hitting the clap button, but it's not working.
It's gently whispering to me, this too shall pass.
Grow more hair.
But again, all those earnings previews we just did at the top of the show, that's not for fun. Like, this is the thing that everything else kind of relies on. Those have to be good reports, and there has to be a lot of confidence in those Q&As. And the good news is we all get to find out together. So, guys, that's the show for tonight. Thank you so much for watching and listening. Remember, there's an all-new Animal Spirits tomorrow. Spotify, Apple, and right here on YouTube. There'll be an Ask the Compound later in the week. And then we will finish with Alex Kantrowitz on an all-new edition of The Compound and Friends. We appreciate you guys. Thank you so much for watching and listening. Talk to you soon.
Ritholtz Wealth Management is a registered investment advisor. Advisory services are only offered to clients or prospective clients where Ritholtz Wealth Management and its representatives are properly licensed or exempt from licensure. Nothing on this podcast should be construed as and may not be used in connection with an offer to sell or solicitation of an offer to buy or hold an interest in any security or investment product. Past performance is no guarantee of future results. Investing involves risk and possible loss of principal capital. No advice may be rendered by Ritholtz Wealth Management unless a client service agreement is in place.